Hello, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan. Today's topic, hang on a second, Sarah, I need to finish this text.
John, are you kidding me? Focus here. And you know what? I'm going to give you a choice. If you cannot put down your phone, I'm going to run this show all by myself.
Well, I would like to choose both because I think the text is important and the show, but I will choose the show.
Such restraint
you have. It is hard to make choices.
Oh, boy.
I want to just also, while I'm making choices, say thank you to the Charles Engelhard Foundation and also to NPEN, the National Parenting Education Network, for making the choice to support this podcast.
And I am an excellent example of a technological citizen today. I have put down my phone. Today's show, I'm Sarah Polinchek, by the way. Today's show is Technology as a Barrier and Bridge to Healthy Family Relationships.
Excellent. And you know, the subtitle, I think, could be Distracted Parents and Distracted Podcasters. Because I know as we were preparing for this, we found ourselves occasionally distracted by all kinds of different things.
It's hard.
Yeah, we are in this, I think, society, social media river of information, and it's so darn easy to be distracted from what it is that we want to focus on.
And I think this generation of parents is the first that's really having to heavily deal with raising kids who are so sucked in by all the technology that's all around us. I am kind of laughing at myself a little bit because I found something that points to the struggle I've had with this problem.
All right. You have two sons.
I do. They are now 15 and 12, but I found something that's dated April 21st, 2013. So that's about 4 years ago.
You just sort of found this somewhere?
I did. And it really speaks to the struggle that I do. I'm going to admit it. I still feel like this management of technology and parenting is, I don't have it mastered. And I don't know that anyone has it mastered. So that's why we're going to talk about it today. But first, I'm going to read this contract that I found. Is that okay?
Okay, yeah. It's a contract that you established with your son.
I think I'm going to say I established it for my son. And you'll know what I mean when I read it.
Okay.
So it says, I, Jerry, understand that people are way more important than anything that happens on any screen at any time. I will never play a screen, even for a second, when there are other people around. The only exception to this rule is when I have been given the privilege of playing with a friend or my brother and we are both playing on the screen. If I have more than one friend over, I will be a gracious host and make sure the friends have more turns than I do. It goes on. This agreement includes when riding in the car with an adult because car rides are a good time for conversation, not playing screens. I clearly understand that if I violate this rule, I will lose access to all screens, Xbox, iPod, TV, etc., for exactly 30 days. If it happens twice, we will choose a device to give away. Three times, and it all goes. There are no warnings. This is it. It will be Jerry's responsibility to make good on this agreement. And then I have the poor kid that signed it.
Yeah, I can see that he has signed it. And you said he was 11?
Yes, he was 11.
And now, you wrote the contract, didn't you?
I did, and clearly,
I can kind of hear you in there a little bit.
I don't think I was in a good place.
It sounds like there might have been some reactivity there.
I would say yes.
But I want to also say how impressed I am.
Hmm.
I'm going to say this because I am. That at age 11, you are reacting in a way that's also proactive because you are establishing standards that you are going to probably need to continue establishing.
Yes.
Right? But boy, it's so much better to do it at 11 or 9 or 7 than to wait until he's 15 and have there be an all-out war because you've suddenly decided that his technology is bad for him.
Oh, I think it would be so hard to try to undo habits that have been established. It's already hard enough just to keep up and try to keep things contained a little bit. This contract, needless to say, did not solve and fix all the problems.
Well, there are a couple of things worth commenting on in your contract, and
I'm trying
to remember. The first one that I just love is the fact that you want him to be gracious and let the friends play for more time, and that you're going to have him not look at screens in the car because that's a good time for conversation. Mm-hmm. I just hear your values coming out there. Mm-hmm. And I think those are actually good things because it's clear that you're teaching your son the way that you expect him to behave, and there's nothing wrong with that. It might be a little one-sided. The 30 days with no technology seems like a long time.
I'm shaking my head at myself. It seems absurd, really. I think if I were to do that over again, maybe 1 to 3 days would be more reasonable. And again, I just think it's very, I imagine it was a place in my life where I was just really reacting. I think I was probably scared.
Yeah.
You know, I'm seeing my 11-year-old who was just really sucked into that world, and I knew I had to do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so let's just parse it out a little bit, because I think taking away technology is an excellent natural consequence for overuse of technology or screens. Mm-hmm. But just in terms of what's wrong with going 30 days with no technology, what do you think might happen that is less than efficient?
One thing I'll tell you is I'm not going to uphold that.
Right.
I don't have the staying power to monitor him and watch him for 30 days.
Yeah.
And frankly, I'm going to be the first to admit that I used screens sometimes for my own. I have a half an hour where I need to focus on something. That's when I would allow my kids to be on screens, because I needed it for myself.
Right.
You know? So I couldn't have gone 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's way too much to ask a kid to have gone 30 days too.
Right. Right.
Too big.
Well, I think one of the things that happens, but what you said is really good, and that is if you can't uphold it, then
right.
obviously you want to say what you're going to do and then do what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that he is going to be so mad for 30 days,
mm-hmm.
right? And he is going to have a lot of different ways that he thinks of you as being irrational, and he's going to come to the conclusion that my mom is overreacting.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 1 day or 2 days, harder to come to that conclusion that you're overreacting and for him to wipe away his responsibility.
Right. I think I hold on to some of my parental power, I guess,
yes.
when I keep it to 1 or 3 days, because I'm able to follow through. And we know that when we state an intended consequence and don't follow through, that's worse than not stating the consequence at all.
Yep. And if it happens again, you can say, oops, that's another day we're adding
right.
on to it.
Something
instead of saying, that's another 30 days.
Right.
Which could become a year, and it's just unrealistic.
So parent, even parent educators make big mistakes, John.
Well, I would not consider that to be a big one, because I would guess that you renegotiated it with him, because in our preparation you did share with me that you have done more than one contract with your children. Maybe
I could wallpaper a house with all the guys.
Okay. All right. One of the things that I want to focus on today is how too much technology or too much screen time and too much television can adversely affect the brain development mm-hmm. of children, and especially very young children. And so one of the resources I'm going to talk about is a man, a pediatrician named Dr. Dimitri Christakis. He is a researcher at Seattle Children's Hospital. His main focus is on how media can contribute to attention problems in children, and what helps. What could we do instead?
I'm going to take a guess and say that he's probably a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics.
He's a pediatrician. I think that's a good guess.
Do you know what they said recently about technology and parenting?
The American Academy of Pediatrics?
Yeah, what'd they say?
No, but this is obviously something that you're glad to tell me.
Ready? Laps, not apps. Get it?
That is nice. It's a nice thing to say. I agree. But you are absolutely cheesy.
I think I do cheesy really well, though. I pull it off. I make cheesy cool. It's just my opinion.
In your own mind.
Yeah. John.
Yeah.
Did you know how much the brain grows on average from birth to age 2?
Now I feel like we're in the Tuesday night trivia.
The brain from birth to age 2 triples in size. Triples.
Yeah, I knew that. You didn't give me a chance to say that I knew that. It triples. I saw it on the TEDx talk by Dr. Dimitri Christakis, and he said it goes from 333 grams to 999 grams on average.
Wow.
Woo. He did a pretty cool TEDx talk on Rainier. I guess Rainier is the location. And so what I want to do is I want to play a short clip from that talk. I know no one can see it, but sometimes just visualizing what you think is happening is a great way to do radio.
Okay, sounds good. I haven't seen it, so I'm excited to see
okay.
it.
Okay.
And this is important because we're technologizing childhood today in a way that's unprecedented. In 1970, the average age at which children began to watch television regularly was 4 years, like this cute little girl here. And today, based on research that we've done, it's 4 months. It's not just how early they watch, but how much they watch. The typical child before the age of 5 is watching about 4.5 hours of TV a day. That represents as much as 40% of their waking hours. Which brings us to Baby Einstein. Now, many of you probably have not seen Baby Einstein, but I will show you a random 20-second clip from Baby Einstein Day on the Farm, and here it is.
Okay, wow, there's a cow coming out of the barn. A cow walking with a farmer and the farmer's kid. Oh, a bunch of sheep. We're looking right up the sheep's nostrils in that one. And then we've got a mechanical horse with a cowboy on it jumping up and down. And that kid walking through it. Whoa, that, I couldn't even.
In that 20-second clip, there were 7 scene changes, about 1 every 3 seconds. It's about the most exhausting day on the farm since John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath.
Lots of stimulation, John.
Yeah, so much stimulation, and it's so annoying. I think that watching that probably would be bad for anybody's brain, but especially, and that's one of the points we're making, especially for very young children, because their brain is developing so fast, so rapidly. And what's happening in the brain is not so much just the size getting bigger, but it's the interconnections. And so what happens is that the interconnections get programmed in some ways to expect these kinds of frequent scene changes.
Mm-hmm. I just have to say that really was a lot. I have a mature brain. We won't say how mature it is, but mm-hmm. it's quite mature. And mm-hmm. the sounds with the visual all happening at one time, that it really, I'm struck by that and imagining a little baby making all these connections.
And the whole idea that Baby Einstein is somehow a program that's going to help your child increase his or her intelligence mm-hmm. is probably a fallacy, probably.
Brilliant marketing, I have to say, because yes. I can honestly remember going back 15 years, and I remember Baby Einstein, and I mm-hmm. remember thinking, oh, something to help my baby's brain. I mean, I remember thinking that, and I knew better. I yep. mean, I knew about this stuff back then, but I was sucked into it too.
So we get marketed into these things as parents sometimes. I also want to just set out the 3-step or 3-stage theory that mm-hmm. Christakis has.
Yeah.
And what he says is that when there is prolonged exposure to rapid changing visual stimuli during critical brain developmental periods, okay, so that's step 1, mm-hmm. when that happens, and then the brain becomes preconditioned to expect and perhaps long for rapid or high stimulation, and then step 3 is inattention problems will develop.
So, okay, so that's the theory. Tell me a little bit more about what that looks like. How does that translate into
yeah.
kids?
Well, the reality, based on some research that Christakis and his research team have done in Seattle, is that he estimates that for every hour per day that children who are about age 3 spend in front of the TV screen, that there will be a 10% greater chance of them having attentional problems at age 7. So if they spend 3 hours a day in front of a TV, they would have a 30% higher chance of having attentional problems at age 7.
Wow, that is really remarkable.
It's significant. Obviously, there are other factors, and he's not making the case that, oh, watching TV is what causes attentional problems or
sure.
all attentional problems or the disorder, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying it causes that, but he's saying this is a big contributing factor. The other thing that he found, and this is, I think, more promising and more exciting for parents, is that he calls this other way that children can have brain stimulation, he calls it cognitive stimulation, and it's through interaction with parents. And so think about taking your kids to the children's museum.
Mm-hmm.
Think about using blocks to play with them at home. Think about reading with them or just talking
mm-hmm.
about whatever it is that you're talking
yeah.
about while you're walking on the farm or wherever you're walking. And he says that for every hour of that, there's a 30% reduction in the likelihood of attention problems.
I like that. I like hearing about things that parents can do rather than just hearing about things that parents need to avoid. And it just makes me wonder about what's happening with our kids' ability to be bored and just tolerate boredom.
Right.
And because I think of all the good things that come out of being bored, right? That
yeah.
ability to be introspective and just think about things and use our imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And also when I think about that, right now we have a lot of research on mindfulness and that this ability that we have to self-soothe by slowing down and kind of going inward, which really is the opposite of constant overstimulation.
Right. Well, and, you know, the whole idea of scene changes and visual stimulation yeah. and entertainment has gotten so woven into, I think, all of our experiences that even as you were talking about, oh, I think it's good to be bored, mm-hmm. I was starting to think, oh, no, I hope we're not boring people who are listening, right?
No,
they're gonna turn us off.
Bored.
Everybody's excited. Yeah. I also remember one thing that you said to me before, maybe several days ago, was that you had said you thought that maybe for some people who are more introverted, that technology might serve a really constructive or positive role. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to remember that technology is not all bad. I think it's mm-hmm. easy for us to have a conversation where we're pointing to all the concerns, just mm-hmm. like with babies, certainly. But as kids get older and develop, and we have teenagers whose social skills are developing, there are some times where it's useful and even beneficial. And there are many examples of that. One, though, is speaking about introverts. So
right.
introverts make up a third to a half of our population. Mm-hmm. And they're a misunderstood population, I think, to some degree. There's many ways to define an introvert. But one way would be that it's a person who socializing takes a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can connect online or with social media, texting or Snapchatting or whatever it is, it's sort of a safe, low energy way. And it builds a bridge to having those connections in real life too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way that introverts can kind of step back and slow down and moderate all the interactions that are sometimes expected in our culture a little bit.
So it's not the same as going to a big party. It's not the same as face-to-face social interactions,
right.
which might be more challenging. And then, like you said, might drain the introvert
mm-hmm.
of some of their energy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you an introvert?
I am an introvert. That's why I speak to introverts. I have a soft spot there.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think, too, well, the research shows that it's a way to build confidence so that if you can have an online relationship with somebody, then you're more likely, in many cases, not always, to be able to step in and have a real-life connection with that person. And the more real-life connections we have, the better off we are.
Right. I think we capture part of what the contingencies are about this kind of technology being helpful. In the title, when we say bridge, mm-hmm. it's really a bridge to healthy relationships and
yeah.
not a substitute for. And it reminds me of one principle that I operate on is that is the technology something that you're doing in isolation?
Right.
Or is it something you're doing with a friend or with a family member or with a parent or with a child? And you're having some shared positive affect
mm-hmm.
and maybe learning things together and maybe competing, maybe not competing, maybe just talking about it. But
yeah.
it gives you some things to talk about. And that, to me, seems like a good way to use technology as a bridge.
I think so, too. You know, I don't think anyone has come up with the perfect recipe for how to integrate technology with our kids. But it's that balance. You know, I would be concerned about an introvert or anybody who only relied on social media for their relationships. But if they're using it in small doses and it's helping them
mm-hmm.
as a confidence booster, I think that can be a great benefit.
Can I share a story?
Of course.
Yeah. So when I was parenting my two daughters, we played a lot of computer games that maybe had a little more intellectual quality, like Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, and Ms. Pac-Man. That's pretty intellectual.
Very intellectual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I recall lots of
And you're
good...
dating yourself, but anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I recall lots of really fun interactions that we had over those games. And I'm glad that we had that as a mm-hmm. part. But I also remember that we would sometimes have preset limits on how many games we would play. Because
mm-hmm.
as you get better at the games, they take longer and longer.
And you can see how you get sucked in.
You get sucked in. Wow, just one more game.
Yeah, I know.
And like now, I mean, I think one of the things that happens with binge watching on any one of those video streaming companies
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, the family can be sitting together. Oh, let's just watch one more. Oh, let's just watch one more. And pretty soon you've watched, you know, five episodes of your addiction.
I know. I'm remembering a story. You know, most teenagers don't like to get up real early in the morning.
Really?
And I was one of those. And yet my grandpa would take me to the coffee shop if I would get up. And this was at 5:30 in the morning. And you know what motivated me to get up?
What?
Is he would feed me quarters so I could play Ms. Pac-Man while we were at the coffee shop. And I would get up at 5:30 to go play Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
I mean,
even though you didn't
really,
like getting up?
Even though I mean, normally I would sleep till, well, teenager time, you know?
Right.
Oh, it's
Yeah,
it's 6:30. Amazing. Yeah. Right. Okay. I think it might be time for money tips.
It might be. My money tip is a four-part tip. Mm-hmm. Okay, you ready? I'm pretty complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all that intellectual stimulation I got
from Ms. Pac-Man. Mm-hmm.
From Ms. Pac-Man. Well, the first one is, if you want your kids to grow up with really healthy and well-developed brains, I think, number one, you got to have some good nutritious food, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, at the beginning, you're using mostly breastfeeding and very much baby-oriented foods, but you want to keep at that to some extent, the healthiest food you can get your kids to eat. The second one is develop healthy sleep routines.
Speaking
I knew
my
you'd
language,
like that.
Yep.
The third one is to touch, to snuggle, to cuddle, to be with your kid physically, because we know the lack of human touch mm-hmm. will cause children's brains not to develop as optimally.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of research on that.
Right. And the fourth thing is words, but they have to be words and interactions, social engagement with real people. The research would suggest that the number of words that kids have in exchange with other humans mm-hmm. is a predictor of their reading ability and their cognitive or intellectual development in the area of language. That makes sense. But what's interesting is it doesn't matter, it doesn't count if you listen to words as a part of a television show.
So just so that I'm clear,
yeah.
If you put your child in their baby seat in front of the TV and they're listening to a lot of words coming out of someone's mouth, mm-hmm. that doesn't count.
That does not count. It does mm-hmm. not increase cognitive development like the real human interaction exchange of words.
Okay, I totally believe you.
Yeah.
So my tip would be to remember that kids pay way more attention to what we as parents do than they do what we as parents say.
So,
in other words, we have to be really aware of our own technology use because that is going to guide or drive the sort of technology consumers that our kids become. Okay? So, I mean, I just have an example of that too, which is that I'm really good. I don't get on my phone in the car. But I used to get on my phone at a stoplight. And now I have a pre-driver, and so I don't even do that because I do not want him getting on his. I want him to know, you know how teenagers can sometimes see a little gray area and
right.
it just moves.
Right.
I just don't want any gray area for him.
Right.
So just being really aware of the kinds of things we care about with regard to technology and act on those rather than just tell our kids. So the contracts.
I can see a contract. For this coming in the future,
for your parent, for you,
and I think it's admirable that you have decided to put your phone away and not even look at it at stoplights. Really admirable and really good.
Yeah.
Good modeling, but I think this could be a contract that you have with your older son Jerry. Maybe you have a contract that he never, not even once, ever uses his phone while in the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, we even as a passenger, you mean?
Well,
or
I mean, because it's a time for good social interaction.
I know.
But also, even if he's by himself, maybe he should be listening to the radio or just focusing on driving.
I think focusing on driving is a really good idea.
All right. Got some resources?
Yeah, I do. There's a book called ScreenWise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. And that's by Deborah Heitner. It's just a book that's easy to digest. I think it's nice. Again, nobody has this recipe perfectly dialed in.
Right.
But it's important that we're just having the conversation and we're thinking about it and we're not just got our nose in a screen.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. My resource, two parts to it. I really think that Dr. Dimitri Christakis's TEDx talk on the TEDx Rainier in that program mm-hmm. is really clear, really helpful. He does a nice job. You can find it using any search engine. Just look up his name and TEDx. He also has a book that he's co-authored. It's from back in 2006. It's called The Elephant in the Living Room, Make Television Work for Your Kids. He's written that with Frederick Zimmerman. I have to say I have not read that, and so I can't speak to it, but I would guess based on his research that it would be a really good resource. It might be a bit dated, mm-hmm. but who knows? Maybe he's got something new coming out.
Well, it's hard because technology's happening. I
can't
keep up.
Yeah. I can't either.
So it's time for us to sign off. I can tell you're getting a little twitchy. You need to get back to that text you were working on at the beginning.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I just want to emphasize once again, like I do off and on, even though I chose to stop texting and to tune in and focus, I made a good choice. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I made that choice, but you are not the boss of me, Sarah. You're not.
Okay.
I think my Twitter fans can wait. And I want to say to everybody, thanks for listening.
Thank you. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.